Hi, I'm Megan Segura.
And I'm Eric J. Mack.
And this is The Daily Dish, Bravo's official podcast.
Bravo and E! Are continuing our conversations to amplify Black voices.
This week, E!'s Daily Pop host Justin Sylvester spoke with Top Chef alum Gregory Gourdet, who described his Haitian-American upbringing and how to push for active inclusion across industries. Plus, he shared details about the long-awaited opening of his first restaurant, Khan.
Justin was also joined by the newest cast member of The Real Housewives of Potomac, Dr. Wendy Osefo.
Dr. Wendy is a professor, political analyst, and entrepreneur, and she shared incredible information about what it actually means to defund the police, as well as how she talks to her three children about race and identity.
These important conversations are happening every Monday night in June, so be sure to follow Bravo TV on Instagram.
Let's take a listen. And stick around and listen to Justin's response to some of the comments that came in. Finger snaps to you, Justin.
Hello, how are you guys? Thank you for coming back. This is Amplify Our Voices, a discussion, a dialogue about being Black in America. I hope you guys caught last week's. If you didn't catch last week's, it was amazing. And it's on the Bravo IGTV. And today I am so excited about our conversation that we're gonna have right now with two unbelievable people. One is Mr. Gregory Gourdet. You know him on Top Chef. You know him from Top Chef All-Stars. He is one of the hottest chefs in America right now. It is unbelievable. And such a love personality. And Dr. Wendy Osefo, who is a political correspondent, she's a public speaker, she is an unbelievable ally and person to listen to, an unbelievable voice, in this fight. And she will be joining us, but also joining Real Housewives of Potomac. So I'm looking forward to that as well. And these two people bring such a different perspective to it, and I don't want to spoil it, because we're going to get in there. And again, thank you guys for coming, because that's the most important part of this whole thing. You guys are willing to hear us out and willing to really receive and be a part of this discussion, because without you, this would not be even possible. So let me see if I can get my boy Gregory on.
What's up?
Hold on. Are you snatching out the glasses right now? Is this your setup in Portland?
Yeah, this is my little bachelor pad.
This is awesome. First of all, Portland is blowing up right now. To see the people and the passion on the news in Portland, amazing. What's it like being there?
I mean, Portland is an extremely liberal town, so I feel it's a very white town, but it's a very liberal town, so I feel lucky to be here. You know, outside of all the amazing resources it has, like being a chef here is really fantastic because we have all this amazing produce, the chef community is really strong. But outside of that, you know, politically, the majority of the city that I live in, Portland, Oregon, is very much in line with so many important causes that it, you know, just current, necessary, Black Lives Matter, from, you know, like equity, gay rights, you know, trans community, you know, we have all of it, and we have tons of people who are passionate about everything. So we've been protesting every single night, and Portland is very much aligned with the voice of what's going on in America right now. So I feel very lucky to live in this town.
Nice. You said something interesting. You said equity.
Yes. Yes.
A lot of people have been talking about equality, but why is it important that we have equity?
You know, I think with the reckoning that we're going through now, and, you know, the kind of civil rights movement that George Floyd's death started, you know, by being kind of like the tipping point of something that's been going on in America forever, you know?
And I think
kind of like the post-civil rights movement, you know, movement that's slowly been building up to this point, you know, at this point, we're pretty much trying to tear everything down. You know, everything that's been built in the past 40 to 50 years, you know, we're tearing it down because the system hasn't worked. And I will say, yes, there have been leaps of success and achievement and opportunities given to POC, people of color in this country. But at the end of the day, so much has been denied from us. So much has been held back for us. And it's apparently clear, you know, the pandemic kind of destroyed everything. And we were just at a tipping point, I think, altogether. So here we are, and it's up to decide. It's up to us to decide what's going to come back and what we're leaving behind.
It's crazy because you're right. The COVID-19 was the tipping point, but it was also, I feel like, the universe's way of being like, you can't run from this anymore.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And you have to react to it, and you have to speak up because you're not too busy. You didn't hear about that because it's everywhere. It's on our phones. It's on our TVs.
I mean, yeah.
This man's face, George Floyd, in every single medium that we had.
Yeah, I mean, it was just hard to watch. You know, I mean, I was following. You know, I followed Breonna's death and murder. I followed Ahmaud's, you know, murder. You know, I watched, you know, that video. It's awful. You know. You know, I cried. Like, I'm a runner. You know, my sister lives in Atlanta. That could be me. So for me to watch that video, I think I watched it like late one night. And then, you know, like it was like the Amy Cooper thing at the same time. You know, I was just like, whatever with that. You know, let's talk about George Floyd, you know, because it's, you know, another man just died, you know. I mean, unfortunately, like here we are in this thing and people are still dying. You know, we lost two trans people you know, part of the trans community, the rights are getting taken away or gang murdered. You know, a young man was found hanging in California and, you know, they tried to say it was suicide. You know, what we're fighting for is still happening as we speak, you know, and as much as we protest, as much as we riot, you know, these things are still happening. People are still getting shot in, you know, Georgia, you know, so it's like, are we not loud enough, you know?
Yeah. Gotta be louder. It's crazy because your family is from Haiti.
Indeed.
And in Haiti, y'all not only sitting at the table, they own the table.
Yeah, so.
And not just Wyclef, all Haitians own the table. What was it like growing up in America? Because you grew up right here in New York.
I did. I grew up in New York. So I actually grew up quite different than my parents did. You know, my father grew up with no running water or electricity. So to raise, you know, me, you know, in New York, yeah, you know, like in the 90s at the height of like rave culture, you know, I just grew up extremely different. They really wanted lots of opportunities for my sister and I. So they worked all the time. They went to school all the time. You know, they put us through private school. They used like scholarships, like whatever government, whatever we could do to put us through like better education, you know, they did, you know, so I was able to go to private school. I went to NYU for a year. I was going to study pre-med, but then I moved out west and I studied wildlife biology for a hot minute. And then I started cooking, you know, and being out in college in Montana is where I actually started cooking and feeding myself and decided I wanted to be a chef. So, you know, my parents, they worked hard and, you know, they have very, very heavy Haitian accents, you know. They were obviously in these neighborhoods, you know, where we grew up was predominantly Haitian American, Caribbean American, Black American, you know, but we were always in these worlds where, you know, they were working at Jewish run hospitals and I would go to these schools and I would be a small cluster of minority students at these schools. They always thought that, you know, you just have to do the right thing. You have to like be prim and proper to get ahead and you have to like tuck your shirt in, you know, and I'm like, Mom, Dad, you know, like, I don't want to conform how I look, you know, not like in like a loss of cultural way, but just like prim and proper, you know, because our culture was always extremely important to us. And you know, we never hid our culture. It was always extremely important to us. You know, we've had tons of family come from Haiti, you know, start going to college here and raise their families here. So it was all just really great. But, you know, I think just them always being such a positive example for me of hard work and dedication. And, you know, I think part of the story is there is this element that this American dream is very possible because my parents did it. You know, they came here, they barely spoke English. They learned a language. They put themselves through school. They raised two kids. You know, they took advantage of everything they could to afford these opportunities to their kids. And it produced me, you know, like I have not had a perfect life, you know, like I'm a recovering drug and alcohol addict, you know, so I've had my falls as well, but I always had the example of my parents put me through these things. What is important is to know that, you know, my story is not everyone else's story. And, you know, my story of hope and possibility, like, it's not guaranteed, because you can have far more than I ever did, my family ever did. You can have far less than my family ever did. And you could try to be getting the same thing. You could just be like a good person, a good Black person trying to do the right thing and go to school, and you can end up shot and dead. So, you know, that's when we talk about equality, we're talking about having the same opportunities for everyone across every city, across every economic background, and us just working together so that can exist in America.
No, 100%. It's so crazy because watching Top Chef this season, but also looking at Twitter and seeing like there's all these hashtags about supporting Black-owned restaurants, and Postmates came through and kind of deleted all the delivery fees, you know, people who are supporting Black-owned businesses. How do you feel, you know, being someone who's about to open a restaurant? Does it feel more invigorating right now that people are starting to put, you know, a spotlight on Black-owned businesses?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's really fantastic. You know, I think at the same time, it is a bit reactionary, you know, because it is a reaction to something that's just really awful that's happening, and this is how we're dealing with it now. But I think at the end of the day, if we're able to walk away from this with a spotlight on all these places that we've never heard of, and we can continue to support them, this is not a fad. This is, you know, we're reading these books, and these books become part of our library. We're going to these restaurants, you know, after they reopen, and, you know, all the other fine dining restaurants are open as well, but we're still continuing to support these businesses. You know, I think if we're continuing to be aware of these resources, these Black and these POC resources, it's not a fad. And as soon as the next thing happens, we shift focus, you know, then I think it all makes sense, you know. But, you know, it's definitely something reactionary, but we definitely appreciate the platform. We need to recognize the contributions of Black and POC to this country in the finer details of everyday living. And, you know, that presence is 100% there.
No, 100%. And I always tell people, because, you know, we talked about The Bachelor having their first, you know, Black Bachelor, and you know, people get really upset about it. I'm like, don't be upset about it. We wanted a reaction. We wanted change. It's baby babies.
Yeah.
But you tell people in your industry, you say, yes, this is great, but what are you going to do for the rest of the year, 5 years, for the next year, to make sure that change really happens?
Yeah. I mean, I think, you know, I'm nosy and like, I know a little bit behind the scenes. So I'm like, okay, who has been working on this for a few months and who has been doing this just now? So like, I know like casting for The Bachelor, like maybe like kind of like took place a while ago. So like, I would say that that's probably legit. He's like, no, he knows.
you know, I host a pop culture talk show.
Yeah.
I hear about everything.
Yeah.
I'm gonna shade ABC right now, but yeah. This man was supposed to be on this season of The Bachelorette. So they did vet him. He was gonna be a part of the 25 men, and they plucked him from there and just made him the Bachelor, because whoever gets to the top three or top four, running to become the next person in line. To hand out the roses. So, yeah, it was reactionary for sure. But I'm lucky in my lifetime that we have Rachel Lindsay, who is holding down the fort, who was the first Black Bachelorette. She ain't going nowhere, and she is questioning every single thing that they are doing.
Yeah.
Bravo, in the restaurant business, you are going to question every single thing because you and I are nosy.
Yeah.
And I think it just takes people, even if you're at a small job, if you're not a celebrity, if you are a celebrity, it doesn't hurt to ask your employers or your HR, like, how are we doing this to make this happen for generations on?
Yeah. You know, I mean, I think there's a lot of different ways to look at it. I mean, I call it active inclusion. You know, people are like, well, how do I do this without, you know, like, posting an ad like, hey, I need to hire a woman, or hey, I need to hire a POC, you know? And, you know, my friend said it best, Nina Compton. She's a chef. She's on Top Chef as well. She's like, listen, if you're a chef and you want the best vegetable or like the best this from across the country, across the world, you're going to go out and find it. So, you know, I think we just have to be honest and, you know, be actively inclusive. I think the best part coming out of this is yes, we are seeking someone, but, you know, make sure that person is the best fit. and make sure it's something that you're willing to invest in, and make sure that, you know, you believe in this person. You know, you're not just checking a box to check a box, but you're actually, you know, choosing the right person for the job, and that person happens to be Black or POC, you know?
When you're looking for a taste tester at Con, I'm gay, I am Jewish, I'm from the South, Katrina, we can check off 10 boxes, I'm ready to eat.
Are you frozen Michael Twitty?
Wait, no. But let me tell you something. Dorothy Williams, who's a friend of mine who was also on Eon Rich Kids of Beverly Hills, she's in this. Okay. She's in the chat right now. And she and I are foodies. And we will go everywhere. But like, we, if it's good, we're in. We're coming. What would you say to young people of color who are coming up in the restaurant industry? Because when you do look at the restaurant landscape, it's not that colorful.
No, it's true. So there's some parts of this. I think, A, if you look at fine dining, it is a very male, white kind of establishment. You know, there's lots of European influences in fine dining. You know, I did it. I worked for a French chef. I worked for Jean Georges for 6.5 years.
Ooh.
You know, yeah, he was, you know, he actually afforded me a lot of opportunities. You know, he, you know, my mentor was his right hand man, still is his right hand person. You know, I was a chef de cuisine friend by 26. You know, I did my intern with him straight out in culinary school. I worked for him straight out of school, and I advanced at a proper rate. You know, within like 5 years, I was a chef de cuisine for him. You know, I think when you think about it, you know, honestly, 1/3 of all restaurants in America is run by a person of color. You know, yes. Half of all restaurants in America are owned or run by women. You know, so when you think about what the American restaurant looks like, it's far broader than the images that we see in fine dining.
Yes.
And maybe some of the things that we might see in publications. But, you know, I think even these publications, these food magazines that are coming down right now, you know, they've made all these types of different cultures of food. They've made them food trends, you know, and if they've all been exposed because there are these white-run companies who don't treat their employees fairly, but every new culture that comes out, it's like the hottest trend.
Yes.
You know, and they put these chefs on these platforms, you know, from African food to, you know, to the new wave of Southern Black chefs, you know, to Filipino food, you know, like they make these things trends when in actuality, it's not a trend in where it's from.
Yeah.
You know, like Southern food, even modern Southern food is not a trend to Black chefs in the South.
No.
Or even, you know, Eduardo Jordan, who lives in Seattle, you know, like to the Filipino chefs. It's not a trend. You know, it's not something that's like good for a year, 2 years. It's like what they grew up eating. It's what we grew up eating, you know? So I just encourage the young chef. Now's a very challenging time because restaurants are closed and we have a very uphill pill to reopen restaurants. But I say, like, if you do not have to look hard to find a chef that looks like you. You know, and maybe 100%. He's not on TV, but he might be on TV now, and he might be in the magazine now, because right now is the time to be aware. But if we're looking, truly looking at what the American restaurant is, they are filled with people of color, because at the end of the day, you know, the people who found the white men who founded this country, we were the people that cooked for them. So, you know, and we are still the foundation of restaurant and eating in this country, because restaurants and dining in America, we're made with our work. So, you know, if you're a young chef, find someone that looks like you. It is not that hard.
You know, no one can smother like us. You know, we get all of in there. When is Con opening as of now?
I was trying to open in January, but this year, but I'm taking some time. I'm gonna let Miss Rona do her thing, and I just want to see what American dining looks like. You know, I don't want to open. You know, to me, this is like a very, very important restaurant. It's my dream restaurant. You know, I was at my last job for 10 whole years, so this is like my first step doing my own thing, and I just want to do it right. It's a very personal restaurant. You know, it's just all my upbringing. It's like all my Haitian heritage. It's like everything I've learned over the years. So this is a very personal project. So for me, I want to do it just right. And it's more important that I open right than I open as soon as possible. So hopefully summer 21 is what I'm shooting for. And hopefully that we can get back either with a vaccine or, you know, Corona just kind of lives with us and we figure it out. But next summer, hopefully.
100%. Everybody out there, since Con is not going to be open until summer 2021, I guess that you find the dopest Haitian spot in your city. Because I'm telling you right now, when I lived in New York, my ass used to go to 107th Street because one Haitian joint at the top, it looked like a but the line out of this place was unbelievable. You can't Haitian food, it's just its own thing. Find that shit and find it today.
Yeah.
Gregory, I love you. Thank you so much for chilling.
Of course.
I'll see you next summer at the opening.
Okay, thank you so much. Have a good night.
Have a good one. He is a winner in everybody's eyes. You know, he said something really important in that, you know, he didn't have the easiest come up. You know, he dealt with a lot of things. And I think one of the most important things is finding that hope, finding something you can cling to, finding that dream that you could really get behind. And it really resonated with me, especially at this time, because I think we're all going through something right now. And we're all, you know, sitting here, you know, wondering what's going to happen next. You know, I got out of South Louisiana. My mother made, you know, less than $30,000 a year. She was raising three kids by herself. And college was only given to people who could play basketball or football. And I didn't really throw a football that well. So finding my dream and finding that hope really propelled me to get out and really make my dream come true. And I'm living it right now, talking to you guys. And I hope that you guys took something from it because it's unbelievable. Defons 85, diversity and representation matters. Yes, it does. It matters on screen, it matters off screen, but most importantly, it matters where it counts, and that's in the boardrooms and in the executive seats throughout every single job, career, anything. My girl Wendy is in here. I don't know Wendy yet, but Wendy and I are going to be good friends. I can tell you that already. Dr. Wendy, political commentator, philanthropist, and television personality. Honey.
Yes, get into it.
First of all, you've been in this arena for a very long time. Mm-hmm. You are not one to be played with in this moment. What's it feel like finally seeing this come to light, although we've been talking about these incidents for the last 5 years?
It's so interesting because, as you said, like these instances have been around forever. It's just now, because of Corona, coupled with, you know, people being at home, everything just came to this perfect storm and, in a sense, brought awareness to this issue. And it's amazing. It's sad because of how we got to this point with the murder of George Floyd. But the energy that you feel when you're at the protest, the ways people are not letting up. I think we're on day 22 of people protesting, and we're not talking about 10 people. We're not talking 15. We're talking thousands of people are out here marching, and they are not letting up. So for me, I am just so excited to see the momentum. I'm so excited to see people coming on board. But what I'm really excited about is what policy changes are going to come out of this, because that's what we need. We need policy.
100%. It's so funny that you bring up, you know, tens of thousands of people marching. I just want to let everyone know, if you haven't seen this image yet, if you haven't seen these videos yet, it's not just people in Los Angeles and New York and
that's
all.
Right.
We have people marching all over the world, especially Hello. Nigeria is very close to your heart because up there. What mm-hmm. would being Nigerians out there and really standing up for everything that we believe in here in America?
I love it. I love the fact, you know, that there have been 50 countries that have been marching, that have been protesting. Of those 50 countries, we have Nigeria. And I don't know if people know, but Nigeria is the largest African ethnic group in the United States. So when I see my brothers and sisters in Nigeria that are protesting at the U.S. Embassy in Abuja and Lagos, releasing a statement saying we do not condemn, or we do condemn actually, people getting killed. We do want you guys to support and continue to uplift Black voices. You know, it just makes my heart warm. That is my country. I was born there. I lived there, you know, until I was a toddler. And now to see that the world is uniting around this cause, it just makes me so happy. And, you know, there's been a call from Ghana and Nigeria saying, our Black brothers and sisters, if America doesn't treat you well, come home. And so I come on back. So I say to everyone, even if you don't go back permanently, please, please, please go and visit, because the country is rich, the people are rich, and the culture is rich, and it's just amazing there.
Are you talking to me?
I'm talking to you.
Me?
Come on, let's go eat some Jell-O fries, baby. Let's go.
I am down for it. It's so funny because we keep on talking about, you know, November 3rd and November 3rd, but police reform needs to be at the top of the ticket in every single state and every single city election. Why is this so important?
It's so important because let's look at the case of George Floyd. Even if those four officers are convicted, that does not change the act of policing. There is a policing issue because it's steeped in systematic racism. That is the issue. Systemic racism exists. Systematic racism also exists. It's both of them, right? And then I want people to also understand that there is certain caveats that police officers get to get away with. There's loopholes. Yeah. And I say this with love because my brother, he's a police officer. I'm the granddaughter of a retired police chief. But in the same token, they have to be held to the same standards as everyone else. They have such a thing as qualified immunity. That means that it'll take longer for them to go to trial or to be charged. Why? If you do something wrong, it's your job. Your boss will be knocking at your door. Hello?
Anytime.
Clear your stuff and go. If a surgeon messes up, they will not be operating on people. But for some reason, when it comes to police officers, they have a different standard. And we have to change that. Spoiler alert, I will let the Bravoverse know. My people at Capitol Hill have whispered in my ear that the president is actually going to put something together. And tomorrow, keep your eyes open. It's tentative tomorrow, but maybe this week, there will be something, an announcement on police reform that is going to pass. So we don't know what the details of that is, but police reform is very important because they have to be held to the same standard.
I'm happy that you brought up and make a connection between your brother and your grandfather, because a lot of people say, oh my God, not all cops are bad. I don't saying all cops are bad.
Mm-hmm.
We're just saying, like we said, in professional sports, there is a doping issue that we need to handle. Right. Not everyone is doping.
Mm-hmm.
Same thing with the cops. Not every cop is bad. We're not saying that. And I think a lot of times people get, and maybe we can talk about this if you feel comfortable, defunding police. I think people think we're just not going to have police at all.
Yeah, so that's not the case. It's so funny. We understand defunding when it comes to anything else, right? Like if we want to defund schools, we understand we're taking money away. But then when it comes to defunding police, people are like, oh, the police are going to be gone. No, that's not what that means. Let's take defunding police as an example. We just saw in Atlanta, a young Black man killed over the weekend. When we watched the video, he was saying, I want to walk home. Let me walk home. I can walk home before it escalated to the situation that it did.
Yes.
If it was community policing, the outcome would be different. The outcome would have been, okay, we will stay here with you until you call an Uber and they take you home, or we will take you home. It would not have ended in him getting shot in his back and dying. That's what we're saying when we're saying defund police. It does not mean that you will not have policing. It's that policing will look different. And instead of them spending millions of dollars getting those military tanks, no, it will go towards training. It will go towards different things. That's what that means.
100%. And I think we need to, as a country, stop listening to one side of the news. Like,
right.
As myself, like, I have to be honest with you, I get my news from three different people. And some of the people I don't agree with all the time, but I feel like for myself, balancing it out, hearing both sides and really making a decision and coming to an opinion for myself has helped me grow as a person. Helped me start conversations with people whom I don't know I would normally start conversations with, because I can start by saying, I know where your side's coming from, but this is where I'm coming from. You know?
Absolutely. Absolutely. And I think it's so interesting. In academia, we call that triangulation of data. Like, you don't take your information from one place. You actually take it from three different points and you triangulate, you make a triangle, and you come to your conclusion within that triangle. So when you're thinking of the news, when you're thinking of information, if you just go to one source, you're hurting yourself because you have to look at different viewpoints. Even me, I'm always reading newspapers. I'm always reading articles. I'm always listening to commentators. And then I triangulate my data and come to my own conclusion. So I just think in this time where people have downtime, so to speak, let's talk to friends. Let's talk to people who have different opinions from us and understand what they're saying, understand where they're coming from, and then come to your conclusion.
100%. And you said it best. And I want to, there's someone in the comments right now, which I think is interesting, because you said, somebody in the comments said, but he stole the taser and he ran. Resisting arrest or stealing a taser does not equal death.
You know, no.
Using a $20 forged bill does not equal death. You know,
right.
I myself like to highlight the differences between people of color and white people. Mm-hmm. There was a man named Jerry who got arrested on my Instagram. I have the video on my Instagram. I'll repost it. He not only stole the batons from the
police,
he beat the police officers with the batons and then stole the car. Mm-hmm. Jerry sat in jail for a few days. Jerry did not die.
That's right. That's right. The people have to understand that there's a pattern and a practice that we see. You're talking about Jerry. Jerry is probably a white gentleman, right? There, you see, so there's a pattern and a practice when it comes to Black people and our interactions with the police. That is the issue that we're trying to solve. And whether people know it or not, even though police officers carry guns, they are there to de-escalate situations. That's their job. Is not to escalate. So if I call a police officer because a guy is sitting in his car sleeping at a drive-thru, the outcome shouldn't be death. It should be the complete opposite. It's to de-escalate a situation. And a taser is dangerous, but a taser is not a deadly weapon. So even if he stole a taser, he can't kill the officer with it, but instead the force that was used towards him was deadly. So we have to look at these patterns in these narratives.
Wendy, girl, how did they snatch you? How the hell did they snatch you on that show? Okay, Oval Office.
Oh, you're so sweet. Thank you. I love being on the show.
wait, when is the show going to premiere? Did you guys have a premiere date yet?
This summer.
This summer. A lot of these conversations are going to come up over the season?
You know, I think that the show does a really good job of highlighting our reality and our real lives. So depending on, you know, whenever we start filming again, you will see how we're dealing with everything that's going on. You know, for me, I am the mom to two Black boys. So there is a lot of conversation in my house. And if a camera was here today, you'll see those conversations. You'll see my boys coming up to me and saying, okay, so we saw this or we heard this. What are your thoughts about it? So I give kudos to the producers for really highlighting the current status of our lives. So we'll see. We'll see what we get to see on TV.
You know, a lot of people say, oh my God, my kids are too young. I don't think they'll understand it. Like, I don't think they get race and da, da, da. My whole thing is, I say, if you're teaching them the Easter Bunny, if they can get down with Christmas and Santa Claus and that a white man comes down their chimney and leaves gifts, like, there is also a time to talk about race and equality, and I think kids can get it at that same age. What do you think, though, as a mother, what's a good age to start talking to your kids about equality and what happens to Black men in this country?
It's really interesting because what I find is that kids know more than we think that they know, right? And again, I have three kids. I have a little girl, but she's only 11 months. But my boys, they're a little bit older. And as the mom of two Black boys, when I hear stories of Trayvon Martin, I see my son. Yeah. When I hear stories of Tamir Rice, I see my son. I'll actually share a story with you. you know, with the whole COVID-19, school's out. So one of my son's friend's moms reached out to me and she said, hey, we just bought our son a BB gun. He's doing target practice. Let me know if, you know, Cruz and Carter want to come over. My son heard the conversation. He was super excited. Like, when are we going to go over?
Yeah.
At that moment, I had to tell him, you cannot go to their house and play with a gun because you're Black. And unfortunately, Black boys are not afforded the same innocence as their white counterparts.
Yeah.
You see, my son is only 7. My other son is 5. Unfortunately, Black kids have to have those conversations earlier rather than later. And that's really sad because even at the age of 7 and 5, their color is seen as a threat.
Yeah.
And I hate having those conversations with them because I never want them to feel less than. But that's the truth of the matter. Tamir Rice was 12 years old, holding a BB gun. Police came to the scene, shot him, killed him before they even asked any questions. Yeah. So even just simple things of the toys my sons can play with versus the toys that their friends can play with, there's undercurrents of race in those conversations.
No,
and
for
so,
sure.
Yeah, it's really sad.
It's really sad. And it's crazy because, like, you know, even my friends who are white say, you know, I don't know how to explain this. I'm like, just sit with them and see how far you can go with them. But if Uncle Justin is Black and he has more issues than your dad does, drive the car, you know,
right.
And starting the conversation earlier so that they get it. But it's so interesting because, you know, I live in LA and being on TV, you think, oh my God, I'm on TV, people. Mm-hmm. I'm protected. That ain't real. You saw Jay Pharoah the other night.
Oh my God.
It's unbelievable. But one time I was driving in my car and this woman, I got pulled over and I was on a dark street and I got really nervous. So what I did, driving until I got to a street with light and there was a woman that was driving behind me, in front of me, and she kind of sort of followed me through this whole thing. So when I pulled over, this lady got out of her car in front of me and the cop got out and said, hey, ma'am, what are you doing? And she said, she was in her 50s. She was this older, you know, white lady. And she said, he is a Black man and I just do not trust what's about to happen. So I'm going to sit here and watch.
Wow.
I thought to myself, wow, this woman picked that up and she didn't even know who was in the car. Like she saw lights on and she saw me veer off and she followed me and it was like, wow, I'm seen, like people are starting to understand issues that we're going through in America. And I live in Los Angeles. Like I live in Hollywood. It's supposed to be prim and proper and everything's supposed to be great, but it's not.
Right. That's really deep. And you know, throughout this whole conversation that people have been having about race these last few weeks is this whole notion of we want allies, like we need allies. And that's true, right? Like in the struggle for Black liberation, so to speak, you need allies. But I always turn that notion on its head and I say, I don't want allies. I want accomplices. I want people who are in the trenches with me. You can be an ally, great for you. I want you to be an accomplice. I want you to look at me and say, okay, we protested. So how are we going to get, who are we fighting? Because we need to be in this together. And I think that that's really important because ways that non-Black people can center themselves in this conversation is for them to understand their power and their privilege. And so if your privilege is that you are not seen as a threat, and if something is going on between the police and a Black person, you can just be there and say, hi, I'm recording this. You know, just be that voice. We need that. Unfortunately, we need that. So thank you to my allies, but salute to my accomplices, because that's what I need.
You know what? And I always tell this to people. I definitely get the accomplices thing. Like, I want somebody who's going to be next to me. And I know it takes people a minute to get to that stage. Not right. Everybody. Level 5 of life. If you're stuck on level 1, you really want to be that ally, but you don't do it. The first thing is starting that conversation in your own homes.
Yes.
It's the easiest conversation for you to have. If you want to get to level 2, you know, you get to the club level, let in, post something that's going to start the uncomfortable conversation, because if the conversation is uncomfortable for you to start it as an ally, try living it. You feel like, all right, level two is good. I can do level three. Let's see it. You know, let's see. Urge people to get out and vote on November. A lot of people register to vote. A lot of people don't think, oh, my vote counts. Everybody's, my one vote ain't going to count. Your vote counts. Now, if you want to get to level five.
Okay, level five. Come on with it.
Grab some Purell. Get them in. Put on your Timberlands and come and protest with us. Come from the cops. If they see us walking there with somebody who is not a person of color, twice about picking up that baton or starting that fight.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
We'll make friends with the nearest white girl at a protest and be like, you're not hanging out. Is not about to get hit, okay?
You are so funny. No, but you're absolutely right. I do think that there are stages in which each stage, I think that individuals need to start having conversations with themselves of, you know, what have they learned at this stage and what can they do more? And it's okay not to know anything. I've had friends say, I don't know what to do. It's okay to not know what to do, but you have to do something, right? Like, we need all hands on deck. This is, I keep on hearing people say, this is a moment. This is a, you know, a moment in history, a moment in history. This is a movement, baby. Like, we have been doing this for years. So you, well, everybody won the invite to the cookout. This is the cookout. Come on, okay? Come through. This is the cookout. Bring your plate.
But if you're going to get that sweet tea, you're going to have to sit here and get this lesson, because there's the auntie or uncle who's going to preach to you.
I'm trying to tell you. So, you know, it's really good to see when you look at the protest, the different faces, the different colors, the diversity of everyone within the protest. And we need to keep that momentum going, because in order for us to really effectuate change, we have to keep this going, keep it going.
And, you know, I know we only speak to our allies, but look, I got to talk to our own Black folks and our own brothers and sisters. Like, yeah, we are all kings and queens, but we have to earn that crown. So come and fight in this war like T'Challa did and earn your crown and bring your sister and bring your brother with you and really get people there. Because I think a lot of times we look at the news or we look at people's Instagrams and we say, oh, she got it. Oh, they got it. They got a lot of people there. They don't need me today. Every person counts, because when you participate and you are involved and you post that you came there and you post why and what you learned, you can influence another person who can influence another person. Let's let this be the deadly disease that we are spreading and it be something else. Like, let's spread this. Let's spread this word and this movement, you know?
I agree. And I think it's so important at this time, at this juncture. You know, I keep on saying the perfect storm, but for this type of movement to be happening or to be catching national attention, and it is an election year. I mean, people, this is truly the perfect storm. Let's keep this going until November. And it's not just about presidential elections. It's also about your local elections. That's really important. Yeah. And I want people to understand that this momentum needs to stay for us to effectuate change. When we look at the civil rights, they were protesting for days, not 20 days. I'm talking about 300 days. I'm talking about a lot of work. So this is going to take time.
It's so crazy. I might need you here for this one. There's somebody in the comments, and I'm okay. Brought this up. LJMALXX. LJMALXX. My favorite word, diversity. But if there was a white movement, it would be classified as racist. I don't think that's true at all. I think that what's happening right now, we have a problem with Black people in America that we have to acknowledge is happening. So calling it Black Lives Matters, like we called it the Women's March and the Women's Movement, because there was a problem that women were facing. I don't think if we would have called it All Lives Movement when it was the Women's March, it's a women's problem. So let's call it out. When it was HIV and AIDS, we called it the HIV pandemic, and it was hurting people, so let's figure it out. I don't think calling it Black Lives Matter makes it racist. I just think it makes us woke and it makes us understand what the issue is.
It's not racist. You know, let's make it plain and simple. As my pastor would say, let's call a thing, right? It's very simple. It's all the lives in America, But which lives are under attack?
Yeah.
Black lives. It is proven with research. It's supported with data. It's not just a social movement. There is data, rich data, that supports the outcomes of Black people are severely different than the outcomes of white people. There is data that supports that the leading cause of Black men, the sixth leading cause of Black men, is being killed. Yeah. Let me. So when we talk about these things, I understand people may not be comforted by the term Black Lives Matter, but sometimes uncomfortable truths is what are facts in our country. And in order for us to liberate ourselves, we have to speak the truth. And the truth is, Black lives are under attack. And in order for us to rectify that, we have to show the world that Black lives matter. Because you can't slaughter someone in the middle of the street like an animal 100. If you thought they mattered.
100.
Those are the facts.
And I know a lot of people take offense to when we say, we all, like, you need to do something. You need to speak up. You need to blah, blah. The only reason why we are asking people to speak up and come out and help us is because we are asking you for your help.
Right.
We're not blaming you. We're not saying that, you know, you haven't been here. We're asking you at this moment. We never asked you for something. We, you guys, this is a fight for humanity, for humankind. This is something that we're not asking for, you know, extra time here or more pay here. We're asking just to simply live and to get in our cars and get pulled over without being killed. That's all we're doing.
That's it. That's it. I just want the same outcomes for my Black boys, for my two sons, that you would see in two white boys. That's all we're asking for. We're not asking for anything extraordinary. We're just asking to be respected. And that's it. It's very simple. It's like we're literally saying we want to be treated equally. We're literally saying we want equity, and people are saying no. Like when it boils down to it, like that's all we're saying. We don't want anything else. That's it. I want my husband to be able to drive home at night, and I'm not staying on the phone with him for an hour, because my fear is if anything happens and he gets pulled over, I need to be a witness to the interaction.
Yeah. Wow.
That's not fair.
Dr. Wendy Osefo.
Yes.
Girl, you snatched my own wig off. you got me all the way together. You know, I'm just so happy and proud that you can join us for this conversation. I'm so happy.
Thank you.
Proud that your voice is going to be a part of the Real Housewives franchise. And I'm so excited for people to see you this summer.
Oh, thank you so much. It was a pleasure. Thank you for having me.
Bye.
Bye-bye.
Oh, Wendy is amazing. I want to point something out before we leave. And I see a lot of you have very strong viewpoints and very racist comments in a conversation about race. I want to first start off by saying you're part of the reason why we keep these conversations going, because even if we just touch one of you in there, it's fine. We change one mind and it's worth it. The second is no one fight back with these people. You know, thank God and thank the universe that they are revealing themselves to us so we know who we can and cannot trust in this fight. And I just want to remind everybody, and I say this to my own friends and associates and people who are also small-minded, be careful what you say on the internet. It can come back to haunt you. It can come back to haunt you, and it can come back to hurt you. And karma is just around the corner. It's two steps away. So for every nasty thing you say about myself, yes, I am gay. Yes, I am Black. Yes, I was raised by a single mother. I don't know why that is such a big deal. But for all the nasty things you say about me and people of my community, it's all going to come back to you. And a lot of times, a lot of you bring up the Bible. And I'm sure when God meets you, that is going to come up as well. So be kind to people. And if you don't have nothing nice to say, don't say anything at all. I love you guys. This is like a great moment. Thank you, Bravo TV. Thank you to Dr. Wendy Gregory. Thank you guys for listening. I truly, truly appreciate you guys coming to listen to this. Keep up the good fight. Don't let anybody get in your way or discourage you. And most importantly, keep your head up. You know, everything gets better. It gets better. Trust me, I've been through multiple fights. I've had to fight for my life and my rights multiple times. And it always gets better. And, you know, we're in the middle of it. But fortunately for us, we're in it together. You know, we found allies that we didn't know we had. And I really appreciate it. I'm on Daily Pop every day starting tomorrow at 12:30, 11:30 Central. And we'll be talking about this on my show and talking about everything that's going on in pop culture, entertainment, and in the world, including this movement. Yes, get down to your local capitals and talk to lawmakers about changing laws in your city. You can phone them, you can email them, and they will change the laws. There are laws out there that affect everybody. This no-knock ordinance, they can get the address wrong and barge into your house and kill you while you're sleeping, like Breonna Taylor. It doesn't matter if you're white, doesn't matter if you're Black, Asian, whatever you might be. Get out there and get that ordinance changed. Get that ordinance changed. It's called the no-knock ordinance. Call your lawmaker. Let them know. Another thing to look into, because a lot of people don't know this, your police department gets billions of dollars a year. And your schools get hundreds of thousands a year. Can you imagine that your schools get less than your police departments? Try your hardest to figure out how you can help defund the police. And I'm not saying defund. We should call it restructuring the police. But check that out, because there's a lot of information, a lot of misinformation that's going out there. And defunding the police sounds like you're trying to abolish it, but it's not that. So read up on that. And it's a good place to start in your city elections, just to get to know who your mayors are, who your chief of police are, who the head of your DA is. Very important, because these people are prosecuting, you know, these acts. Are they sweeping them under the rug? Either one. Yes, that is on change.org. I've had to educate myself throughout this whole thing. And it's been pretty empowering to just be involved in it, you know? Same with the women's movement. When the Me Too movement came on, it was interesting to read about all of these things and all these statistics and women when it came to pay and when it came to harassment. This is an education for everybody, not just non-people of color. Yeah, so I'll see you guys. Follow me at The Lady Sitter. And I love you guys.
And remember, watching Bravo isn't a guilty pleasure.
It's self-care.
Yeah. Guys, let's keep the conversation going. We want to talk to you all week long. You can find us on Instagram at Bravo Daily Dish.
And on Twitter at Bravo TV. Just don't forget to use the hashtag Bravo Daily Dish.
Or reach out to us personally. I'm everywhere at Meg Segura.
And I'm everywhere at Eric J. Mack. That's E-R-I-K.
And if you're on Facebook, join the Daily Dish Facebook group.
You can post about what you're watching, your favorite shows, who's your favorite housewife, ask a question, start some drama. There's a lot of good stuff in there, so check it out.
You can also learn more about the podcast at bravotv.com.
Bye, guys.
Bye.
Looking fine, and I got my girls with me. With the boys at the table getting tipsy, miss me, kiss.